It's good to be here. As I was looking around and I saw so many folks that I saw speak here and came to speak here, a little bit intimidating. I was telling Trey before, you know, it's been 20-some years and he finally ran out of speakers. And so he gave me a call. I saw someone that came in the door that said he called him also. And so I was the last one to be able to speak here at Johnson's Ferry. I feel like I've been a member here. I've got a lot of friends here. I've got some partners that are here in a couple different businesses. I've been on technically 2 or 3 mission trips with the Johnson's Ferry Mission Program, and I've been back to the first one. I went to Austria with Trey and some others 5 or 6 times, and so have gotten to be real close with Wolfgang, and we've been real apart. We've been the last 4 years, I think, and we're playing a role in a ministry that was birthed here at Johnson's Ferry, and I got introduced through a trip here, and so I feel like I've been a part of Johnson's Ferry, even though I live on the other side of town and have some different things. So I've, as Trey said, also been attached to the CEO ministry. It's meant a lot in my life. There's a couple of people here and that have been real important in my life that I've learned a lot from. I see Wes Cantrell in the back, goes back 25 or 30 years. I tell people very often that he was a mentor. We were in a business group together for about 8 or 10 years, and I've heard him speak here and other places, and so I'm just thrilled to be here. So I thought for many of you all that I don't know, that I would tell you a little bit about myself. So I'm a business guy just like you all are. I'm much more comfortable sitting in the seats that you're sitting in and doing the things that you do. I generally understand that if you provide a good or a service and do it well, folks will come back. As you'll hear a little bit later, I'm involved with a ministry now that I'm trying to figure out how the nonprofit world works and ministry works as well. But I just feel like I'm part of you all. I'm also not a regular speaker and a professional speaker, so I'm kind of figuring out what to talk about. But I thought the best thing for me, because I think it's reflective of some of the point and the mission of the CEO luncheon here, is just to tell a little bit of my story to start. So I was born in Swainsboro, Georgia. I had told someone helping me put the PowerPoint together that it was Mayberry. And so that's literally the best analogy. Although I met someone here today who's married to someone from Swainsboro. Yes, right here. Immediately called my name, called my dad's name. And so I've got a little bit of history that may follow me around. But I was born in Swainsboro, which is population maybe 6,000 in the town. And it was literally kind of Mayberry. Except for me, it was a little unusual that my father was born in Brooklyn, New York. And so I haven't fact-checked this, but I'm fairly certain he might be the only person from Brooklyn, New York that landed in Swainsboro, Georgia, and decided to practice law in Swainsboro, Georgia, of all things. So he was the epitome of the, you know, the Yankee lawyer in town. And so even though I was a kid, you know, he was in the Navy for a few years, but I started first grade in Swainsboro. But I knew it was a little different. I knew the town, it was where I grew up, but I thought our family was a little bit different. And in later years, I learned that, you know, Dad being from New York and us landing in Swainsboro caused us to have a different view in the world, and had me have a little bit different view in the world. And that really changed significantly when I went to high school. I went to boarding school in New York. So as a 13-year-old who'd spent 9 or 10 years in Swainsboro, Georgia, I went to boarding school in New York. And so today, with social media and other types of things, that might not be quite as shocking, but it was a radical, you know, transformation to walk into New York. I'd grown, fortunately, the only Jewish family in town lived across the street from us in Swainsboro. So I had some concept of that there was other religions and Hanukkah and things, because, you know, when I got to New York, it was about 40% Jewish and, you know, maybe 40% Catholic, and everybody else was in. We had folks from probably 10 countries that were in my school, 12 countries. And so it was a rude awakening. But I say this because it really impressed on my worldview. So my worldview was greatly impacted by Swainsboro upbringing that was literally Andy Griffith Show. And then spending 3 or 4 years in New York, and subsequent to that, and having my father's family and other of those in New York. So just moving along in the history, coming from Swainsboro, I got married a little bit late. I was 19 when we got married in Swainsboro. For the rest of the world, it might seem a little early, but it was a little late being in South Georgia. And so we just celebrated our 30th. Actually, next month will be our 31st anniversary. And so we had a renewal of the vows last year. And so that's a little bit of change in a lot of ways. My wife has stayed ageless and beautiful, and I just continue to age. But so Robin grew up in town, so we were kind of divided the city. We had the Methodist church and the Baptist church and the public school and the private school, and then I went off to New York. So we kind of covered all parts of the town in New York, in Swainsboro. We've come along. We've got two boys. A lot of folks here know our boys. My son, Barrett, on the left, is 23, and he went to Samford. I've met a number of Samford graduates here at Johnson's Ferry, and moved to New Hampshire for a year, and now he's back in Birmingham with an organization called Common Threads, which I would encourage you all to Google if you want to be see some inspiration about a millennial group and how they're combining work and faith and doing church in a different way in Birmingham. It's really an inspiring to see what he's just moved there in the last few months to be a part of them. And then my youngest son, Christian, is 20, and he's down at Georgia Southern, so he kind of made it back to our roots a little bit. We grew up about 30 minutes from Georgia Southern, and so he's all college, doing the college thing, the fraternity thing, but these are our two boys. So as I said, I'll come back to that to kind of round that out. We left New York. I came out of New York and decided I wasn't going to go back to Swainsboro. I didn't want to be in New York, and so Atlanta became the happy medium. So I applied early to Emory, moved down to Emory. Robin met me at Emory, and we kind of embarked on the life that we would have. And so we've been here since then. We've been here since 1984, and you know, I started off with this entrepreneurial gene and having the worldview of Swainsboro, hopefully that shaped some values, but then having the experience in New York also. And so, you know, we're talking about inspire, influence, and impact, and I am. And so the first part is inspire. And I was inspired, as I say, from a lot of things that happened in Swainsboro, a lot of things that happened in New York, and some positive and some negative. As I say, I was kind of wired. I feel like I had the gene of an entrepreneur. Both my grandparents owned companies. My dad was a lawyer, but he was a little bit different kind of lawyer. But I came out of New York in the 80s, and so it's a little, with a bit of irony right now, Donald Trump was larger than life, and he was buying Trump Airlines and the Plaza Hotel and different things, and I went to school with some very wealthy people, and a lot of that's what inspired me, and I thought, boy, this is kind of the life. I definitely don't want to go back to Swainsboro. As a matter of fact, the first book that I can remember reading was The Art of the Deal. It came out, I think I was a senior in high school or something like that, and they were blasting the airwaves, and it was all over the news. And so my early influence and inspiration, I'd like to think I took some from Swainsboro. At the time, I would say none. I moved on, saw New York, came to Atlanta. But the influences and what I thought was going to be my inspiration there was just all about money and companies and building and things that I really learned in New York. And so to kind of parallel the business life, we'll jump back and forth. So that started me on a track of starting, being a part of, purchasing, selling a lot of companies, most of which failed. A couple came out okay. And so my life today is largely around these companies here. As Trey was alluding to, Impact 252, which we're going to talk about in a bit, is kind of where we sit. But the picture of the graphic is a little bit just to say, business has been a part of my life, and I'm involved with a lot of different things. OnePath, some of you guys know, was started, I don't think I see him, Rob told me he was going to be here, but started by Rob Borden here in town, and I joined, here at Johnson's Ferry, and joined him. And we spent about 10 years, still together, I guess, but spent about 10 years together. But business has been a big part of my story, and it's been very diverse in a lot of different ways. I'm not one of those guys that came out, learned a discipline and a craft and perfected it and stayed in. I've bounced around. I've been very, very opportunistic. And as Trey says, comes a lot of ups and downs. There's been the life of an entrepreneur, probably more so in the family than on myself has been one of, you know, extreme highs, extreme lows, bankrupt a couple of times, didn't formally file, but certainly very insolvent. And, you know, took pride probably back in 2007 or 2008. It was a little bit of a badge of honor. You know, if you hadn't gone out of business and bankrupt, you know, you really weren't entrepreneurial. So that's how I look at it looking back, was that was kind of part of what we needed to go through. And did that with a couple of people that are in this room here. And I would say, to try to run on three different tracks, my spiritual life really mirrored my business life in a lot of ways. You know, I grew up in the church, grew up in Swainsboro, drifted away some in high school, college, didn't have any great moral failures, but was really just adrift as went in and started my life. But the business life, my identity was all around business and what I was doing. And so my spiritual life kind of worked in inverse order to the business. When things were going well, there was drift. When things weren't going well, you run back to the church and run back and cry out to God to try to figure out. So it's funny how it works that way. It really seems like it should work the other way, but that was kind of representative of my life. One thing that I would say in reflecting back, that it's difficult to be in relationship with people that you love when your identity is wrapped up in your business. And so as I look back to those times in particular, there were a lot of good times, a lot of bad times, but when your identity comes from something external like that, talking about identity is maybe a separate topic, but the effect that it has on relationships can be very difficult and, you know, tragic in a lot of cases. So moving on, I started thinking about influence. You know, when some of the early inspiration, or some of this is quite frankly kind of looking back in retrospect, when some of the inspiration of what I wanted to do wasn't fulfilling, I started thinking back about what were the influences of my life and where was the greatest influence that came in my life. And three or four people came to mind. I had a high school headmaster named Thad Horton in New York who, you know, took a sheltered kid from South Georgia in. And the way he served me and came to me and cared for me, you know, I thought I had some of the greatest influence in my life and launched me. There's people, some of you guys know a guy named Jim Moy that has mentored me and discipled me for about 20 years. And, you know, when I look back at the influence that he had on my life and why was that the case, it was because he modeled kind of servant leadership and unconditional love and caring. And started reflecting back on what is power, and maybe that's where I started looking for power, and what is power versus influence. And I had thought of influence as really power. I'd interchanged the two words, but so much of that's positional. You know, we have a president that's, you know, a dominator. We have, you know, bosses. We hear of titans. We see it on the news every night, the people that are powerful. They have influence, and they're rich and famous. I put two definitions up there. One is kind of where we think of people with status and wealth and power, where truly I think influence is the ability to have an effect on someone else. But as I come back and then really start to think about what Jesus' model was, he clearly, you know, changed the paradigm about influence and created servant leadership. And so as I thought back on my life as how I want the rest of my life to be, I tried to start reflecting on where influences came from my life and what that looked like. And it really wasn't from positions of power. It wasn't from positions of authority. And those are the weakest types of influence. It was from a model that Jesus laid out for us and serving others. And so one point I'd like to just kind of leave with you around that is a slide about having influence and where you have influence. Most of us go through life, and I certainly did, just very accidentally. And some good things happen, some not so good things happen, but you just kind of wander through life and you have different circles. I mean, these are circles of influence of yourself, your family, your team, your organization, and your community. And over the last couple of few years, been subscribing to a kind of a leadership philosophy that we work with in our companies, but also one for life that says intentionality is really where we need to be. And being intentional about kind of knowing who you are, knowing yourself so that you can lead yourself to lead others. And it's hard. You know, it's easy to live accidentally. It's easy to influence who you influence when the situation is right or just randomly happens. It takes a little more effort, but, you know, your influence is so greatly expanded when you walk through life intentionally, whether that's with yourself. We know we need boundaries, and we know what tendencies that we have that cause us to do things. And if you can be intentional with yourself and then with your family and kids, lots of influences coming to kids. But really, the context of this group at work and being intentional at work and being intentional with the people and thinking about how you gain influence as opposed to having authority or power, positional authority over folks. And so I put another quick graphic up that relates to that at work. And so influence to me, and the one that we really, really learned and was modeled from Jesus, is, you know, if you ask the question, what am I doing with my authority? What am I doing with my power? How am I influencing people? Am I for people? Or am I for myself? Am I against people? Am I for others? Are you for the people that work for you? Are you for the people that you're serving, your customers? And it's a very simple graphic, a very simple formula that says if you have power, which everybody in this room has power, has a lot of power, if you couple that with humility, which is what we learn from Jesus, you'll really have true influence. You know, you can order people, you can use your authority to do a lot of things, but if you really want to have true influence on people, it's coming from a position of humility. And this is, you know, that was something that I learned probably more the hard way. And looking back at early life and early companies, I was about the position, I was about the power, I was about the authority, and really learned how much that was undermining influence and how there's a much better way to live life. And so, kind of moving ahead a little bit, the third part that I started contemplating on was how do you have impact? And I think impact's where it all ties together, is that, you know, we want to be inspirational. We get inspiration from different people. We want to have influence. We ought to have influence. The church needs to have influence. People in this room need to have influence. You know, Brian and I were talking at lunch over all the influences that are on society now, all that are in church. We know ones that are in business. Become friends of late with Tim Irwin, who does this wonderful presentation called Derailed, and it's how people use power and use their authority, and you know, they just kind of lose track of who they are, and they lose all their influence. And kind of back to that bullseye of target, those circles of influence, it's really interesting that your influence can really only go out exponentially. It can really only go in one direction. And what we find from people that get derailed are that they've got some core flaws that were either with themselves or their family that were not obvious to the public. And then when they become exposed, all the influence that they had at the company, the organization, the team, the community comes crashing back down. And so it's just so important to, as Tim says, to guard your core and to have to be able to have influence. But the impact is where I want to spend a little bit of time on, in that, you know, I decided I want to tie it all together with impact. And I think that that's where we ultimately want to be in our personal lives and our business lives, that we can start to look around and say, you know, where can we use our influence to have the greatest impact? So I started realizing that at OnePath. You know, we had a company that was growing. We had partners that were aligned in beliefs and values, and we saw that we were starting to have some influence over customers, employees, financially, and other places. And it became a great kind of proving ground and training ground to be connected and equally yoked with folks that had the same kind of values, to learn how, and to me, to learn how influence can be used at work. So for me personally, there's lots of folks that have callings, but I feel like my calling is to use business influence and to affect the kingdom in that way. And I think that's where, I mean, we have family responsibilities, we have personal, we have church responsibilities, but in the context particularly of this room, you know, I want to encourage people to think about how you can use your influence as a company CEO or a company leader to affect the people that are around you. And I'll also submit that we have the ability to affect folks that Bryant will never encounter. Matter of fact, I think I could argue that we've got the ability to impact and influence exponentially the number of folks that Bryant will never encounter. Everybody goes to work. You know, it's been said that if you have, you know, 10 or 20 employees, the influence that you can have stretches to hundreds of people because you have families, employees, and vendors, and customers, and other types of things. And so, you know, I want to encourage people to think about where your centers of influence and how you can use that for positive impact. So for me, I'm a, you know, for you personality type folks, I'm an ENFP. My wife thinks I might be a T. I'm a high D, you know, the strength finders, other types of things. But I do a lot of things, and it's been evident here. I've got ADD, I think you could say. I don't think they diagnosed that back when most of us were coming along, but I'm quite certain I'd probably be in that category today if I was coming through. So I needed to name the company to be a reminder of what we wanted to be about. And so we named the company Impact 252, which is where we are now and where I hope to spend the rest of my career from a business and an influence standpoint. And so it was really where the name of this talk came from. We sat down and said, you know, we want to inspire, we want to lead, we want to have an impact on folks. So inspire, influence, impact, they were all I words, and impact became the force. And the 252 comes from Luke 252, where Jesus grew in wisdom, stature, and favor of God and man. And maybe somebody smarter than I can tell me, but I've been told that that's the only verse where Jesus is referred to as a teenager in the Bible. We can have somebody wiser than I fact check that. But that became the inspiration, if you will, for what we wanted our company to be about and how we wanted to use our influence. So our mission is just as simply that, to strive to inspire, influence, and impact those in our life to grow in wisdom, stature, and favor of God and man. And we do that through youth sports and through a few other things that we can talk about after. It's not specifically germane to today. But it's to me, it became a constant reminder that we've been given a platform, been given an opportunity to influence people, whether that's employees or customers or creating jobs or you know, using finances or whatever the case may be. But to me, I just needed a constant reminder, and so we wanted it to be that within our company. So I want to take the last couple of minutes and just tell you another part of my journey that helped me kind of realize and come to the point that we are today. I've been involved with an organization called FCCI. And FCCI is the Fellowship of Companies for Christ International. And the mission, and I just put the vision and the mission up there because I do think it's directly on point with at least part of the intent, if not the intent, of this CEO ministry here. And our mission is to transform the world through Christ one company leader at a time. I think that's pretty similar to what we're doing here. And to pull out the highlights, you know, we try to do that through encouraging and equipping CEOs and business leaders. And encouraging and equipping is really just what it says. Different people need encouragement and different people need tools. We do that through conferences and small groups and materials and things of that nature. But I came along through, I had someone who had mentored me and discipled me that invited me to go to an FCCI conference and get involved with some FCCI materials and groups and things of that nature. And, you know, I learned that there was a large group of people, a national and international group of people, an organization formed right here in Atlanta, that the organization was formed by business people in Atlanta 40 years ago that just were asking the question, which I think is a very germane question to the reason for this lunch, of what does the Bible say about running a business? What does the Bible say about, you know, how I use my business? And 40 years ago, there wasn't much out about that. And not to give you a long history, but they turned to folks like Larry Burkett and Henry Blackaby and a lot of folks like that who started researching to give them, one, information of what it said, and then two, to give kind of practical advice and tips. And so that's where FCCI came from. And I became associated with them about 10 or 12 years ago and got on the board, and then through a series of events a few months ago was asked to be the president of the organization. And so for those of you who did not weren't aware of FCC, I just simply wanted to tell you. I think it's the kind of thing we're going to talk to Brian. There's many folks that have been in Johnson's Ferry that have been involved for years. Rusty was telling me 30 years ago he came to some. Wes has spoken there and been involved there, and a lot of you guys have been to some of the conferences or small groups. But we're an organization that does this. I wanted to tell you about two things that are coming up. One is coming up very quickly. There's some materials in the back, but we do some conferences. We've got a conference coming up in Washington that's at the Museum of the Bible that is actually going to be a gathering of about 12 or 14 marketplace ministries. So organizations that are from a national level down to a local level, much like the CEO ministry, to talk about how can we better equip business owners and business leaders and CEOs across the country to use their influence. And so that's just one of the ways. Our next conference is coming up in September, but there's lots of ways to engage and counter. But our whole mission is to encourage and equip you in doing what you're doing. And so there's lots of ways to do that, but you know, this is just one. And so as we wrap up, I want to hand it to Bryant, who may have some questions too, but I just wanted to challenge folks today to start the conversation, to start thinking about, you know, how can you use your business? How can you inspire, influence, and impact others through your business for the kingdom of God? I believe that many of you all probably feel like I do. Maybe you haven't thought of it in that context, or maybe you do, that, you know, we have a priesthood, and in my case, it was my business and the people that were around me. And I feel like that's just as much of a call for many people in here as it was for Bryant to come to the church. And in a time when organized denominational religions are on the decline, there's a lot of ways to get out there. And I think now more than ever, you know, businesses are a very vital tool to reach people, get the gospel, and to inspire and influence and impact people around the world. So thank you, guys. I think we're close to being on time.